Welcome to Flower Hour.
A podcast completely dedicated to baking. I'm Amanda in Atlanta.
And I'm Jeremiah in Sacramento.
Hi.
Hi, Amanda.
How's it going, Jeremiah? Have you survived the holidays?
Oh my gosh, I've survived. How about you?
I'm alive and well, thank you.
Oh, good. How are things in that kitchen of yours?
They're kind of peaceful for a brief pause, but then starting in the next couple days, I'm going to be hitting the cakes hard. We're going to be back to cake business mode. I've got some birthday cakes that are on order. I've got some kind of like a winter party cake coming soon. So back to cake land, which I'm pretty happy about. How about for you?
That sounds so fun. For me, it's back to, well, actually it never really stopped during the holidays, but cookbook proposal work. Now, a lot of people think that when you're writing a cookbook that you write your whole manuscript and then you shop it around to publishing companies, but it's sort of the opposite. You create maybe 10 or so recipes to be included in a proposal of a lot of other documents that you then sell or propose to agents and publishers. So I'm hard at work on those 10 recipes. I'm almost at the point where I'm going to start asking for people to be testers, because before they can be sent to a publishing company, I have to make sure they work. So
pick me.
Oh my gosh. I was hoping you would say that.
I would love to test some of your delicious recipes anytime.
Oh, so it's exciting and scary. The thought of, wow, these recipes have to be on point. So that is what my week has been about.
It's a lot of work. I feel like with testing a recipe that you're going to share, particularly in print in a cookbook, like it's very different from baking and just making sure that one time it comes out delicious, right?
Right. No, it's true too. And so for me, because the concept of my book is adapting gently the traditional recipes of Portugal for the American palate and kitchen, a lot of these things that I'm writing recipes for, I haven't tried yet. So, which is really fun. It's super fun to taste these things for the first time in my own kitchen. But I want to make sure that I'm honoring what the recipe should be. So thankfully I have a trip coming up to Portugal and I will be able to take tons of notes of how these recipes should taste before I send them off to a publisher.
I love that you're doing that and trying to be respectful of those things, because a new fun twist is really exciting.
Yeah.
But then especially for somebody like me as a potential customer of your book, I want to know that if I'm making it,
yeah,
even if it's your special twist, I want to make the actual thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's really cool that you're trying to stay true to it, but you're doing it Jeremiah style, but you are trying to make the thing you're setting out to make, which is really smart, I think.
Absolutely. And the head notes I've learned in a recipe, you have a lot of room to explain why you're doing what you're doing. And also to say, well, I've made this choice because, but if you eat it in Portugal, it's going to be like this. And if you want, you know, so like I'm thinking about Antoinette and pound cake, any type of dish that has a huge following or a lot of people make, there's going to be these slight variations. So I want to make sure that I give light to that, well, this recipe, some people make it with just cinnamon. Some people use anise and some people use a combo. So, you know, I want to make sure that I'm covering all my bases without getting crazy though.
Yeah. Cause that note could get really long if you let it like just expand, especially with the two of us. Cause we are both super chatty and over explainers, I feel like. Right?
Yeah. So I have a question for you about your cake consultations, because if you've seen Amanda's cakes, they are extremely artistic. And so how much, when you said you have a client that wants a winter themed cake, how much input do they have? And how does that whole process from consultation to finished cake, how does that work with you and your clients?
So it's very different from cake to cake. And cake business is such like a broad term, I feel like. Like there's anything from a bakery or even a home baker where you create a menu and you kind of say, here are my five cakes, maybe permanently, or five cakes for the season or something like that. And people choose from those. For me, I don't really have a menu other than kind of a general guide on pricing type of menu.
Got it.
Everything is super custom. So that's a really good question, because the consultation stuff is you know, where it all happens, really.
Right.
You're not choosing from a menu. For me, I try to keep everything on email for a couple of reasons. One, because of my kids. It's very chaotic sometimes to do phone calls, and it's very chaotic if I'm taking orders on all different social medias to kind of streamline it. I keep it all through email, and then there's some back and forth there. For the most part, the people who come to me have found me from social media.
Mm-hmm.
Or from doing the Great American Baking Show, one or the other. But mostly now it's from social media, and they kind of know my style, my general style. And
right.
Really lucky for that. Like, that's one of the reasons I'm so thankful. One of the many reasons I'm thankful for social media, because then they find my style and that's why they're seeking me out. And so I'm really lucky. A lot of times people will give me a general guideline of, here's the event. Here are some flavors I would like included. Here's the vibe of the event. And a lot of times I will ask people, like, can you choose one of these three words? You know, I might say like classic, trendy, or minimal, you know, and then from there I can kind of build from the vibe that they want. Cause I feel like that's more important than somebody, they're not going to get their best cake if they get too specific and say like, I want a pink flower on the northwest end of the cake and trickling down on the southwest side. I would like, you know, like at that point, I know my skill set. So, and I also know sometimes I make something and the caramel's more runny, or sometimes I make it and it's thicker, or, you know, like different things. And I know how it's going to behave. And at that point, sometimes is when I figure out the design. So it's very free flowing is what I would say of how it looks. The only time it's not is with weddings. I feel like for a wedding, you need to provide a sketch. You need to provide a little bit more of like, here's where we're going. Unless you have a couple that genuinely wants to be surprised. Unless that's a request, you don't want to surprise someone on their wedding day. So then it's a lot more specific, but that's a very long answer.
I loved it. I'm so fascinated. I could talk to you about that all day. But I think as bakers out there that are considering having a cake business, for instance, if I was considering it before I met you, I would think that, oh gosh, I've got to be good at fondant. I've got to be good at themed cakes. I've got to be good at sort of all the sort of stereotype of what a cake artist does. But what's amazing is you've created a business for yourself that is the type of cake you want to make. And you've created this niche for yourself that people come seek you out for your personality, for your style. And I think that's really encouraging to these bakers out there. If you want to do this, you can create your own signature style and stick with it, and people will love you.
It's very true. I think if, especially if you're doing what you enjoy, it comes through a lot. And people enjoy that. I mean, we always talk about baking with love and that kind of thing. And I think that extends to the decoration. It extends to the baking, of course. And I will say, though, I'm very fortunate to live in a city that's large enough where you can be kind of specialized. I think the smaller population of wherever you live, you may have to have broader skill sets if you want to stay in business. Because
that's true.
I can get enough requests for purely buttercream type cakes. And then if somebody asks for fondant, I can send them to somebody who's really great with fondant, and then they can do the same for me. And somebody can, you can be more specialized in a city, but if you're in a rural community, you may need to capture every cake of your town.
That's true.
So it just depends. I think I'm very fortunate. And I'm also very honest about, I don't pay our family's bills with my cake business. It is income, and it's something that I'm excited about, but because that changes your business a lot. If you're relying on it for income, it's a different ballgame. I have a very I would say, luxurious experience with a cake business. I have the luxury of saying, that's not my skill set and I don't have to learn it because I don't have to be able to pay my bills. So I can keep it very, very, I never know. Do you say niche or niche? That's a whole nother podcast for me. I need to start listening to some grammar podcasts, but I can keep my cake business very niche or niche, whatever you want to say. So
there you go. Wow, that's interesting. That's really helpful. Really helpful, I think, for anyone thinking of starting a baking business.
Yeah, well, hopefully, and maybe we could do a cake business episode one day with even a couple of cake people that have different objectives and different skills. I think that would be really interesting for me. So hopefully for other people too. But today I've probably chatted more than enough about cake business because our guest is going to be Selassie and we have a lot to cover with him. So we're going to keep this short, you guys, so we can get to Selassie.
And if you don't know Selassie, he's from season 7 of The Great British Bake Off, or if you're watching it on Netflix, it's season 4. And he just appeared on The Great Christmas Bake Off, which just aired in the UK on their Channel 4. And he is a big, big deal. We cannot wait to talk to him.
Yeah, I'm excited for every single guest. That's for sure. I was thinking about it the other day. I'm like, every time we say we have a guest, I'm like, I'm so excited. And today is definitely no different. I'm so excited. And I feel, I don't think Selassie even knows this. I've interacted with him a ton on social media, but I don't know if I've ever told him, but his season was on when you and I were in England filming our season of Great American Baking Show. So we were watching in our hotel rooms as his season was airing. And he's just this, if you're not familiar with him, he's super duper chill, I feel like a very positive type of energy.
Yes.
And we've talked a lot about how stressful the tent is. And so as we're going through the experience, I'm watching this guy and he looks like he's having so much fun. And I found that approach to being in the tent specifically very inspiring.
Yes, me too. Well, Selassie, welcome to Flower Hour. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much. Yourself?
Oh, I'm well. It's such a treat to have you. And you were just on The Great Christmas Bake Off. And what was it like being back in the tent?
Oh, the nerves came back, but it was really, really fun. We had a great laugh, myself, Val, Becca and Paul. It felt different because obviously it's the Christmas period. And I think it felt less of a competition and we actually had a lot of fun. A lot of fun. It literally, everyone was just messing about, you know, we laughed and we joked a lot. And there was, personally, I didn't feel there was pressure because it was just nice and it's a festive period. So we had a lot of fun, but it was great.
I think that sounds like such a fun experience. Hi, by the way, I was kind of like quietly lurking.
Hello, Amanda.
I was like, get into questions.
I'm like, Jeremiah's like ready to go and I'm just sitting here starstruck just quietly. But yeah, I can't imagine how fun it would be to be in the tent and it not be like in such an intense way to be in there. And I mean, I'm sure it was still kind of intense because you care so much, but just to be in there and kind of play a little bit would be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I always play around. I'm literally a big kid anyway. Doing Bake Off, I was always playing around. But I think it was a lot more extra this time because, again, it didn't feel like a competition. As much as, obviously, all of us wanted to win and do well, it was a lot more relaxed. And it was actually an amazing experience. No pressure at all.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, I would do that. That sounds fun. Well, we haven't seen it because it's hard to find in the States access to that video. So I've been popping around on YouTube hoping
I think it might be on YouTube because Bake Off was on YouTube for a while actually, which was quite strange because it's never usually on YouTube, but I had family back in Ghana that used to watch it on YouTube back on before, obviously, went to Africa.
Yeah, we're going to have to try to find it because I snooped a little bit because I was hoping to watch it, but I couldn't watch it. So I don't know if you know, Jeremiah, but I don't even know what you made. What did you get to make this time?
Ooh, good question.
It's the usual three formats. So you've got a signature, technical, and a showstopper. So the signature, we made a roulade. Any roulade you want, flavor, etc. But it had to be, I think, a certain measurement as usual because the judges are always cruel. and then the technical was mince pie. Mince pie, of course, is Christmas and, you know, you need mince pie on your plate. And the showstopper was a snow globe cake.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so wow. It was technical, it was hardcore. So it's like it wasn't like it, so you don't have to make a big one. You have to make, I think it was eight snow globe cakes. We had to make mini ones.
What?
So that's a lot of sugar work. Yeah, we had 4 hours for that, I think, if I remember correctly. So we all used a sugar substitute, isomalt, to create our globes. And then we used domes, silicone molds, silicone domes to create the mold effect or the snow globe effect with the sugar once it's all melted and ready to set. And then, so Paul, who did really well, and he basically went really, really technical on everyone, and he blew his sugar, you know, the ones that are professionals use, like sugar blowing. He basically did that, and it was just amazing. It was absolutely, I was actually in awe because I've always wanted to land there and do that, and it was great watching him do it.
I would just like put my stuff down and stop and stare. I'd be like, what are you doing?
I actually did. I stopped doing what I was doing, and I started watching. I was like, oh God, this is amazing. And I walked over to his bench. And just the next thing watching him, and it just looked amazing because the way it works is, especially with blown sugar, you need to have like a lamp there to be keeping your sugar power warm while you're blowing the other sugar. So you have to kind of work really quick, and you know it was intense, it's technical. And I don't know if you guys have the same kind of, I guess, baker issue in the tent where temperature doesn't always work to your favor and, you know, equipment and stuff. And he executed well. I mean, everyone did really well, to be honest with you. And it was such a fun experience to go back into the tent.
Wow. And did you prep differently being on the show before? Or what was your preparation process like?
Because generally I'm quite busy because I've still got obviously my day job. And I do obviously the other baking and other TV stuff on the side. I'm generally quite busy with other things and preoccupied, and I can't sit still most of the time anyway. So I did a bit of prep, and that's always been my approach. I don't like to over-practice, so I'll probably try it once or twice, or I know how it's going to be like, so I just write it down and I don't practice it, and I submit it. and then just hope for the best. But I'm just a lazy baker. I love to bake, but I just don't like to write them down. So I bake so much and forget to write down the recipes, and people ask me, oh, can I have the recipe? I'm like, oh, snap. And then I have to quickly write it for them, and, you know, there'll be a lot of errors in terms of grammar and spelling and stuff, but yeah.
we are very much opposite bakers because I am like a repeat, prep kind of psycho, right?
because I follow your blog and it's just amazing because it's all structured and you've got the data. You know what? I'm quite jealous because I wish I was this organized and, you know, I write things like, but I just, I don't know. I'm terrible like that.
I think it's awesome. When I was talking to Jeremiah before, I was saying your season of Bake Off was on when we were in London. So when we were filming our show, we were watching yours as it aired. And I would watch you and I'm like, I need to figure out how to be more like Selassie. Like, he's enjoying his experience. He seems happy in the tent. And I had to like it really helped me kind of shift my perspective a little bit because I am a very intense person. Like, I look very calm on the outside, but I'll be very, very intense inside. And I was like, I need to figure out like how to be like this guy that I'm seeing on my TV. He looks so calm and cool in this crazy experience. So yeah, I think it's awesome.
I mean, I think the demeanor coming from, I don't know, I'd probably just say my African background helps, but I'm generally quite calm and I always have like a positive take on life anyway. So, for example, I generally went in the tent to have fun and I try to enjoy that. And things that I can control, I do my very, I go 100 with it. And anything else that comes after, then I guess I leave it to fate. But the advice I give to a lot of people when they're baking or doing anything is just have fun with it and just do not stress. The more you stress, especially coming from a banking background, you know, the more you stress, you don't see things clearly, you're prone to make mistakes, you know. So just have fun with it. Have fun. I know life needs to be serious sometimes, but you know, we're only here once. So just have fun and live to the best of your abilities, and yeah, just go for it.
Yes, sir.
I sound like Socrates, some wise man now, but I'm an idiot.
I doubt that. Well, are there any bakes or types of bakes that do get your blood pressure going a little bit?
I'll probably say the more technical ones. I mean, with cakes and biscuits and pastries and pies, I've mastered them that I could literally go in my kitchen now and bake them without referring to a recipe because I know what goes into it, you know, the flavors, what works, etc. But when it gets a lot more technical, so things like, let's say, souffle, for example, that it gets a lot more technical, and that's where you need to understand the science behind it and, you know, getting the air in and not knocking too much air out of it, you know, things like macarons, you know, just the more technical stuff. It gets my blood going, but if it's too much, I just stop baking. I just can't be bothered. I just pack up and I do something else.
That's good advice too. Yeah. Just move on.
Yeah, just move on. Move on.
What would you say are the skills or knowledge that the tent taught you? I definitely felt like it was a crash course education in baking that I hadn't had before. But are there any things that you're like, wow, the tent taught me this and this and this?
Oh, yeah. I personally think it taught me a lot because I'm a laissez-faire baker. I'm very relaxed. You know, I just put things together and hope for the best. And, you know, most of the time or sometimes it works. But having gone in the tent, you know, I learned a lot about how to write a recipe in a structured manner so people can understand it and be able to replicate what you've baked or what you're trying to or what you're asking them to bake, for example. So we learn things like you need to put the ingredients in order as they go in the method of your bake, so it's easier for people to understand and to follow that way, which I didn't actually know before going into the tent. So, you know, just things like that is great. You know, you learn how to be organized with bakes and, you know, when you're baking things and the processes involved, what goes next and why you don't add this to this at this stage. You know, being organized, understanding the more technical side of a particular bake. And, you know, it taught me a lot. Organizational skills, time management skills, being able to convey a message to the audience in the sense of, you know, why or what is he trying to get us to bake? You know, do they understand the recipe? And it teaches you a lot.
Yeah. Oh, couldn't agree more.
I think that's an interesting thing to kind of take away because it's easy when you're watching the show. I think, you know, the show says that, you know, you've prepared this at home, but it's easy sometimes to kind of, even having gone through it, like to kind of watch and just think, oh, they're just making these things. But that is a major skill I acquired too. I was always, you know, organized, but I never really had to write a recipe for somebody else to read and have all those ingredients for me. I was very, like, as structured as I am, I really like the creative side of baking. And so in my own kitchen, as I'm making something, I'm like, well, maybe I'll put some orange zest. That could be cool, you know, and to, in the tent, have to make sure that I wrote down like one orange for zesting and I need a zester and like that kind of stuff to be very prepared. And so that they could have the ingredients. I think that's interesting that that was a takeaway for you. I would not have guessed that, but I think that's a good one.
Because they were, and I know, you know, they were very particular when we wrote something. So again, the simple things were, for example, I was actually the worst out of the 12 bakers because I used to get so many pushbacks to say, we need you to be careful with this too. Again, I just wrote the recipe. I didn't care. I just wrote to submit it because I just wanted to bake or I knew what I was going to bake. But what they were trying to teach us in, you know, is being able to write it properly for people at home to want to make it at home rather than not understand what we're trying to say or what I'm trying to say. So we had, what was it? For example, yeah, so if you're making a cake, they were very particular when you put just butter, because normally I'll just write butter. So they'll come back to say, is it unsalted or salted? Because stuff like that will affect the bake. And a lot of people would think, oh, should I use salted butter or unsalted butter in a cake, depending on the cake you're making or wherever you're baking, if you're making a pastry, for example. So you do learn a lot. You do learn a lot.
Yeah, such a cool experience, one I'm super grateful for. I was curious, so kind of not such a tent question, but just watching you on Instagram, I feel like you make such a broad variety of things where it's like, you know, maybe you make bread or maybe you make cake or something like that. Do you have something that's your most favorite thing to bake, like separate from even eating, but you just enjoy the process of making?
Ooh, I think I love baking. I really love baking, but I also enjoy cooking. So this will probably be a food question. Once I start cooking, I think I enjoy the process a lot more because there's no sort of waiting periods in between. Whereas with baking, for example, there can be waiting periods depending on what you're making. If you're making a cake, depending on the cake, wait, you make the butter, the cake mixture, put in the oven, then you have to wait till it's ready. Once it's ready, if you're icing it, it has to be cool before you ice it. So there's a lot more to baking, and it's very easy to bake, of course, but I think with the cooking, I enjoy that because it's quicker. I can just pan fry something or boil something and just shove it in my mouth so I don't have to wait.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, because with baking, there's almost always, I mean, by the nature of baking, there's a waiting period for sure.
I love your stories where you're cooking. I always get so hungry and wish I was there. You cook such beautiful, delicious looking food.
I mean, when I was growing up, I actually wanted to be a chef. And I think I kind of gave up that dream when I was going to university or college and I didn't go through with it in the end because I selected cookery course as one of my courses at college, but I didn't do it. So I've always had the passion to cook or be in the kitchen. And I guess it became a hobby. And I just started baking at a later stage in my life at university. And luckily for me, because I kind of knew my way around the kitchen, it came in a way natural to me. So I didn't have to sort of learn too much. I mean, you always learn with baking anyway, but I didn't feel that it was something that would be a lot of work, if you get what I mean.
Absolutely. What would you say are the bakes or dishes that Americans need to try that might maybe, so I'm thinking maybe like British stuff or international or European things that you know that Americans need to try or haven't tried?
Ooh. This is a tough one because baking now or cooking, we're becoming not just the nation of food or foodies, it's literally becoming a worldwide thing where everywhere you go now, food and bakes actually plays more of a massive influence or role for people wherever they go. They want to post something about what they make, what they're eating, be in a restaurant, at a market, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's a tough one because I'll say something like Cronut, but you guys have Cronut there because the guy that created it, Dominican, so he's based in, I think, New York, in Soho.
Right.
Yeah, and in the UK, you guys have roast, right? Sunday roast?
You know, we really learned more about that when we were in England.
Okay.
It's not something...
Okay, then I will say Sunday roast. I might say scones, but you guys call it biscuits or something, right? So again, that, you know... A lot of the things that are here now you can find pretty much anywhere else because food now is such an international thing that, you know, you can't say, oh, I don't have this anymore here, because everyone is doing different things or bringing the culture from somewhere else into a certain location where they don't have it.
Yeah, you're right. No, you talked about mince pies earlier, yeah. And I love a mince pie, and I'm always shocked now how many more Americans I meet know what they are, because I feel like years ago, maybe no one in America knew what a mince pie was unless you had your British family.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you guys are going to roll your eyes at me, but I have never had mince pie, so I still need to get around to it.
Really?
Yeah, I've never seen one in a shop. I've never like had a reason to make it. Like I never. So I mean, I think
stuff actually, because I made loads. Had I known, I would have put some in the box. It would have lasted. I would have made it.
I would have loved that. Yeah, I feel like I need to make it happen though, because more than ever this year, and maybe it's just because of like following so many of the British bakers, I saw them all over my Instagram, and I'm just going, now I'm like craving something that I've never even tasted. It's a weird.
it's quite easy and straightforward to make actually. So, you guys are raising sultanas in the States, right?
Yeah.
Sultanas are basically golden raisins, right? Is that
exactly.
Yeah. So you can actually make your own mince pie if you really needed to try. So in the mix, you make your mince meal. So alcohol, sugar, sultanas, raisins, nuts, cherries, glassed cherries, not fresh cherries, and put some. Yeah, just add your own stuff, but you need raisins and sultanas, etc. in there, and then cook them. Chop them really in tiny pieces, and then cook them for a bit, and then stuff them in a pastry, and then bake and eat, literally.
Can you make the filling and keep it almost like a jam? Like, can you store filling, or do you have to make it and use it?
No, you can store it. You can make it and then store it till next Christmas. Literally, that's the great thing, because you cook in alcohol, so the alcohol again acts as a preservative. So, I gave someone a jar just after Christmas, and they're going to hold on to it till next Christmas. And people have mincemeat jars in their cupboards till Christmas for 2 years, and it's still okay sometimes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's me. My mincemeat this year was from last year, and it's delicious. Go. Yeah. Still really good. Yeah.
Another thing that I had never had when we were there was Eton mess. I don't know if that's like a thing that you would like, Selassie, but that for me was like a revelation, because all the time I have extra meringues and things like that. And so now I'm completely hooked on the idea that this can be a dessert.
I've never been keen or a big fan of Eton mess or pavlova. I mean, it looks nice and, you know, it tastes great if you have the right one. But I've never been a big fan of Eton mess, to be honest with you.
Okay, so then you just need to have some more.
Yeah. it's weird, right? But I wouldn't say I'm a fussy eater, but I'm quite particular and tense in the sense of what I eat or what I like to eat. Because I try not to eat a lot of my bakes, so I always give them away or take them into work, you know, give them to neighbors, etc. I don't actually eat butter or like butter or the taste of it. So I never ever make buttercream or butter frosting. So I always make cream cheese frosting. The cream cheese cuts the taste of butter out. And that's the only way I can eat cake with icing on it. I don't have butter on toast. I don't eat cheese. So every time I bake something cheesy, it's actually not for me. It's for friends or people who requested it. So yeah, I'm weird like that.
That's so interesting. Yeah, because one time you mentioned that on Instagram about not liking butter. And I was like my mind, like even still, like I have no words. I'm just like, I don't even know where to go with that information. But yeah, I think that's cool that you mentioned like giving your bakes away. I know for me, that's a huge reason I even started my cake business, because baking so much, there's no way my appetite does not match up with my appetite for baking, the amount that I want to bake. So I was curious about that with you, because I noticed, you bake a lot.
At least twice or three times a week. Some of them I don't actually post or share on social media. But I do, I do bake a lot. It's not necessarily because people have asked me to do it. My brain is constantly running at 100 miles per hour thinking I could be at work and, or, you know, I could be somewhere and I'm just preoccupied thinking, oh, can I make simple thing like a banana bread, but with a twist? You know, I'm always thinking of things to do when I get home. I always have ingredients at home to make, so I don't necessarily need to go to the shop to pick up stuff. And I just come home and I bake wherever it is. And I say, oh, okay, that looks nice. That worked. I'll write it down, not necessarily write the recipe, but I write what I've done. If obviously anyone ever asks me, I need to make it again at a party or when I have guests, etc., then I'll do it again. But it's, yeah, I think I'm a bit addicted to it. It's bad. Oh, yeah. So I basically, when I get home and I've thought about something, before I carry on, actually, so this is it. I'll be somewhere, have a piece of paper and pen with me, and I'll jot down what I need to make and the design that I'm hoping to achieve. I'll get home, bake in the kitchen, and it'll actually look completely different. As I'm baking, I'll be acting differently, so I'll design it differently. So it's, again, my mind is always constantly moving and trying to do different things, and it's a problem, and I kind of feel I'm addicted. Which isn't a bad thing, but yeah.
I can totally identify with that. I have that like mind running around in circles kind of thing when it comes to baking. A lot of times, even in the middle of the night, I like have this idea and I'm like, I have to write it down. And then sometimes even writing it down is not enough. I'm like, okay, I guess I just have to bake right here, right now in the middle of the night. And then more often than not, I'll like pull up Instagram or I'll open my phone to put some music. And there you are at like, you know,
crazy
what
hours.
For you is even later. Yeah, I'm going, it's even later there and he's baking up a storm. So yeah, I mean, it's like a little bit of an addiction sometimes when it becomes your creative outlet. Like it's something that you like can't deny. The question I was going to ask you though is, I was curious about like where. So you said you like write things down, but in general, like when you're going to make a recipe, what puts you in the kitchen? Is it an idea? Is it hunger? Is it because it's a gift for somebody? Like, what's your like inspiration to get in there and bake?
For me, I'll say it's an idea. It's not really hunger because I don't eat a lot of my bake, surprisingly enough, although I look like a bloody tank. I don't eat a lot of my bake, so it's never really hunger, and I can just have an idea and then go into the kitchen and just bake it. I'm always impulse buying. I've got so many baking gadgets and equipment, and as soon as I buy, I need to use them at least once just to make sure that I've got my money's worth. I bought a waffle maker the other day, used it once, it's under the bed. I ordered loads of molds because I want to start making mirror glaze cakes, etc. I've made them before, but I want to actually make a lot more. So mousse cakes, proper high-end patisserie stuff. And I'm going to teach myself to make that, of course.
I'm excited to see those.
I'm with you there. Yeah, I love those.
They are, they're amazing. But what will put me off that, you know, the idea is there, but what will probably put me off that or make loads of that is because you have to freeze the mousse once you make it for you to add the glaze on top, etc. That might put me off because it's a long process. But apart from that, I would love to make them, to make a lot more of those.
And those definitely spark my imagination because you can have so many different layers and textures, and all of a sudden your mind can start going like, ooh, that with that and that crunch with
exactly
that.
For me. So you've got, I've seen loads where they have like a ferritin base, they've got like a biscuit base, they've got jelly in the middle. Then they've got so many different flavors working, and it makes you think, you know, You can literally pair everything now. It doesn't even have to be sweet. So you can make chocolate and you can pair it with salt, you can pair it with herbs, and it will actually work. And it goes back to my point about how food is now so international that flavors that you would naturally or traditionally think would never work because this ingredient is solely for cooking savory stuff in the kitchen, and this is just for baking. Now people are been a lot more daring and combining flavors, combining ingredients, combining ideas, and it works a treat. And people execute that in stuff like the entremets and the glazed cakes. Yeah, it's just amazing. And even just normal cakes and flavors. I mean, Amanda, I follow your post and your stories, etc. And I've seen so many cakes where you've made where you've added certain flavors to this. And I think actually that's quite interesting. I would never in that, and it's great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I love that creative part of the flavors. So it's fun. And I like that you mentioned herbs too, because that's, well, you said herbs, but
you said herbs. So. Herbs.
I was able to translate. So yeah, I think that's such a fun thing that, at least in my world, that's very new. I mean, I'm sure in other places, maybe it's been really popular, but here in Atlanta, I'm seeing it more and more pop up, where with something that's sweet, people are bringing in more herbs and more savory type ingredients other than just bacon. Like, we've been using bacon in a lot of things for a while, but now we're using more like savory, even like cheeses. I'm seeing a lot of really interesting frostings and toppings made with cheese, which is really cool. But yeah, I'm totally with you on the flavors.
Bacon and maple cupcakes with like crunchy bacon on top, you know, just things that you think, ooh, bacon and a cupcake on buttercream or, you know, cream cheese frosting, that's weird. But I use one of the idea hubs I use is Pinterest. So I if I'm struggling with something, I'll, for example, go on Pinterest and then see how it was, I know, you know, the process, and then that all always helps us guide us. So I don't know if you might have Pinterest in the US. It probably started in the US, right?
Yeah, it's huge here, but I don't understand it. I need to learn. Like, I have
it's,
to learn.
It's actually great. It's so, I'm not a very techie guy, right? But Pinterest is amazing. It's actually not just for food. So for tools, home decor, literally anything you can think of, you type in the search engine, it'll come up with ideas and what people have done before, and then they've posted it. You can just, it just works. So if, for example, when we're making the globe cakes, I went on Pinterest to see, you know, what a globe cake actually is, because at the time I actually did not know you could make globe out of sugar and put it on a cake or make it work. So I Googled it. I went on Pinterest and actually saw it, and there were so many different ways that people have done it and used it, and it was perfect. And that's when I saw videos about the blown sugar, where people have used that, or professional chefs have used that for cakes and different things and desserts. And it's actually a great tool. It's an app. If you download the app and you register it, just try out, set something, I don't know, hot cross buns, and it will bring up so many different kinds of hot cross bun cakes, actual hot cross buns. So it will tell you people using different flavors for them, and it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I have to figure it out.
That's a good tip. Yeah, it's helpful too when you want to see what other people are up to, and that's great. You have recipes out online, and is there one of them that you would love for people to try?
Oh, that's a good one. I'll probably say my, what's it called? Let me see. The sheet cake. Is it the Texas sheet cake I made for Bonfire Night? And that I really enjoyed making that. So I made that for Heat Magazine. And that was great. So it's such a simple cake to make. You mix all the ingredients together, and it's a spiced chocolate cake with, I think it had cinnamon, nutmegs, you know, nutmeg and whatnot in there with chocolate, which again was spiced, and then you top in marshmallows and you just blowtorch and then sit around the table with a group of friends and literally eat. And I think one of the reasons why I've always loved food and cooking is the fact that you can share with people. I'm always having friends around, or I always have friends around, and you know, it's all about just making a big meal and then everyone just tucking in or digging in wherever the thing is, and it's just great. So I probably say for the baking side, that recipe. For the cooking side, because I do a lot of cooking recipes, so I'll probably say my lollipop chicken, which is amazing, actually. Yeah.
Gosh, that sounds really delicious. I'm getting hungry.
I know. I'm going to make this sheet cake. I'm going to try to make
this.
Because that sounds
me
like
too.
Straight
it's
up my alley.
It's a skillet sheet cake. And it's actually, I made it once and I loved it. And I made it at a food festival as a demo for an audience, and it was great. And yeah, it's just perfect. It was so easy. You can make it in under half an hour from start to finish.
That's awesome. We're going to do it.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I wanted to ask you about, I don't know if it's a worldwide thing that pop-ups are really big, but I remember seeing that you had your cupcake pop-up. And I wanted to know more about that, because everything I saw was like, because I searched it up online later on, and it was like, you know, every single cupcake was made by Selassie. And I was just like, I think a lot of people are really interested in kind of dipping their toe in the water of starting a business. And we have so many bakers that listen. And I thought, if somebody's curious about doing a pop-up, like what were your takeaways or just like, what was the experience like?
You have to be with a pop-up, you have to be hands-on. And again, you have to be also careful of what you're making, the flavors, because you have to consider the timings, whether or not you're able to deliver, because at the end of the day, these are paying customers. You know, it's nice when you're giving people freebies, you know, they love it and they'll eat it and they won't complain unless they're really, really bad people. They complain. but generally, people love a freebie and they enjoy eating. But when you step into the pop-up world, people are paying for it, and usually pop-up prices are higher than normal prices because they pay a higher, I guess, rent on location, etc. So people always want to get their money's worth, and they want to make sure that whatever they are buying is good, is tasty, is well sourced. So for me, I always work on flavor. So if you're doing a pop-up, make sure, and if you want it to last, make sure that you've worked on your flavors, developed it. So no one would pay £10 for a basic burger, because they could get it from McDonald's or KFC. You know, so if, let's say, you're making a burger and you make your own mince, you have control over what goes into the mince in terms of the flavors and what you can do with it. If you make your own bread or you source bread, make sure it's good bread, you know, flavorsome bread like brioche, you know, just something. So flavor is definitely key. Make sure you pick what you're selling, right? So something that is not tiresome or tedious to cook or prepare. Because it won't be worth it otherwise. If demand is really high and you're struggling to push demand out, you won't enjoy it. So stuff like that you need to consider. You need to be pretty organized, and you need people helping you out. So I made a limited number. So I made 200. And that was really enjoyable. But it made me think, you know, for something like that, you definitely need people helping you, even if you need someone packing stuff in boxes or, you know, cleaning up after you. But if it's a one-man show, it's not easy.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. 200 is not a small number of cupcakes to make, that's for sure.
Yeah, 200, four different flavors, four different, I guess, designs or piping. So you have to consider all those things, and it can be challenging. A fun challenge, of
course. Yeah. Would you do it again? Did you think it was fun, like enjoyable enough to do it again?
In fact, I actually enjoyed it, and I'll definitely do it again. I've got a few things planned for next year, which I'm looking forward to. So that'd be great.
I've been curious, just because I think it's so fun to kind of like fantasize about who you could bake for or what you would make for them. Is there anybody that would just be like a dream come true? I mean, you've gotten to bake for some pretty amazing people just by being a tent baker, but is there anybody in your mind that you're just like, oh my gosh, it would be a dream come true to bake for?
I mean, I keep telling people, so I mean, I'm grateful that people come to me and ask for baking advice, and I don't feel personally I'm a professional. I'm a home baker, and I'm happy to share ideas and tips to people, with people. So any sort of big actual proper baker or cook out there. So people that I look up to, Raymond Blanc. So if he wants to come over for a meal, I'll happily cook for him. Jamie Oliver, Nigella. So you've got some really talented, amazing chefs out there. So any one of them, I'm happy to entertain them. Even Mary Berry. So and I'm happy to go for them. Obviously, I'll feel the pressure because they would know what they're talking about and what they're going to eat and how it's cooked.
I think that's super brave to pick culinary type people, but it sounds like a great dinner party.
Yeah, I think for me, it will be culinary type people or Jay-Z. If Jay-Z wants to come over, great. I'm such a big Jay-Z fan, so if he wants to come over for dinner or lunch, yeah, it'd be awesome.
And Beyonce, she can tag along too. That's okay. So
yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Well, I do hope the Prince Harry calls you for his wedding cake.
He better. I mean, I'm a big fan of suits. So if that helps, then that's great. So put in a word, you know, with Meghan Markle.
That would be fun.
Yeah, I've watched all the Suits, and so it's really like interesting seeing her in this new role. I keep looking, and I'm like, this, like, it's very hard for my mind to take in.
Any nerdy baking tips you have for us nerdy bakers?
Oh, I'm not. I don't think I'm a nerdy or technical baker. Tip wise, I probably use, you know, I always tell people when they're making pastry. So I notice when some people are making things like biscuits or short crust pastry or pâté sucré, whatever it is, they knead the dough a lot, which you shouldn't really. It just shrinks the pastry and it makes it very chewy. So I think that's a good tip, because a lot of people feel that they have to knead it to bind it together to be able to roll it out, which isn't really the case. So I think that's my tip that I always tell people. With cakes, depending on the cake you're making, make sure you don't overbeat the mixture or not too much air out of the cake, because I really love light, really, really light, fluffy cakes. So that's why I always make things like cupcakes or, you know, Genoese sponge, because they're so light and it just means that you can eat a lot more cake without feeling too guilty.
I love that. I love a spongy cake too.
Yeah.
So I love those tips. And I'm curious, like, if you're trying to learn something new, and you kind of mentioned Pinterest and the internet a little bit, is that where you go if you're trying to learn a brand new skill, like something that you've just never made and you need to figure out how to do it? Are you a book person, an internet person, a class person?
I think I'm more of an internet person than a book. I don't like reading at all. I think I'm more of an internet person. I'm more visual. So I need to look at videos and pictures for me to understand what's going on and how the process works, rather than read about it. Because I'll be reading something and I get easily distracted as an individual personally. And I've self-diagnosed myself to actually have ADHD because I've got such a short attention span that reading for me is very difficult, I think. I don't know. I mean, I can read. I work in a bank, so I can read stuff, but reading books and recipes, if they're too complicated, I just lose interest. So I'm very visual. I like to see things, see diagrams, see pictures to be able to do that. So, and the internet is great for that, because people post pictures of what they're baking. They post videos of the process involved rather than, you know, write about it.
I'm so with you. My grandma Google taught me everything.
Yeah. I love your grandma. She's great.
Well, we've loved talking with you, but tell us all, what is next for you this coming year?
So I've got a lot of things written down for myself, or I guess personal growth and what I need to learn. I mentioned Entremets earlier, and then it'll just be different other bakes. I've still got things to write down and a lot of admin from the back of my motorbike trip in the summer. Because I was visiting literally different bakeries across Europe on a motorbike. And I was just taking ideas and writing them down. I actually need to write them down properly and then practice them. So I've got a lot of backlog of new and exciting things that I'm going to be trying and doing for next year.
Well, we can't wait to follow your adventure. We love everything you post and everything you're up to.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Glad to be on here. It's great. It's actually such a great idea. It's so cool.
Oh, thanks.
It's completely so cool. Indulgent. I mean, we're doing it because we love it, and it gives us an excuse to talk to people like you. So,
no, but it's such a great idea. It's a good way to also share ideas amongst the baking community. Because baking, from obviously Bake Off and the American version of Bake Off, people now want to try things at home. So stuff like this is just nice and, you know, interactive and educative for people to actually learn things and practice at home and just get ideas for new adventures.
Well said. Exactly. We hope we can definitely inspire our other bakers and keep building this community around people who love to bake.
Keep it going. It's awesome.
Tell them how not to screw up like us when we do. So,
no,
yeah, but thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. And I had to say one last thing. I really love your baked like creatures that you were doing for a while, Selassie's friends.
And I actually noticed that when I stopped, a lot of people were messaging me to bring it back. But it was hard to keep it going with the timing. But I will bring it back again next year. I need to find new animals.
Bring it back. I want more friends. It's so fun.
Yeah, once a month instead of every Friday.
Yeah, maybe it could be a seasonal thing. Like every summer you do your baked friends or something.
Oh, well, thanks again. We can't wait to talk to you again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Be sure to subscribe to Flower Hour on iTunes or SoundCloud. And if you're enjoying your time with us, leave us a review. We'd appreciate it.